it just kind of reinforced. It's like a flywheel. Like you start asking, people say yes, then you ask again. I don't know, people just need to ask. And then you just find that people say yes, and then you ask more, and then they say yes. And and you can do this in the context of like asking for a discount at the coffee shop, right?
What is up, you gorgeous bastards? It is your boy, Mr. Ask, a.k.a. Rabbi Candlers, a.k.a. Noah Kagan. Today, I am chatting with Chris Hutchins. He is a new friend and the host of All the Hacks podcast. I want 5% of you to go check out his show if you're learning, want to learn more about credit card points and freaking fire hacks. Now, Chris has grown his podcast extremely quickly. And what's really impressive is Chris did this while he had a really high $250,000 day job that was paying him. Chris is also a master at asking for what he wants, and today this is a masterclass on for how to you to get what you want in your business. You know the coffee challenge, which is also a big part of Chapter 2 of Million Dollar Weekend? Imagine that, but on whatever those big bodybuilders take. Chris has excellent advice on it. His intentionality and laser focus is truly remarkable. He asked his way actually to becoming one of the biggest podcasters out there. Now in this conversation, you're going to enjoy three gigantic things. Number one, making an ask easy to say yes by doing what for the other person. Number two, how do you actually monetize being a content creator? Chris breaks that down so he was able to quit his day job. And number three, how did he quit his day job and exactly the path so you can copy it for yourself? You're going to enjoy those three ear nuggets plus growth strategies plus more along the way. If you enjoy this and you want to hear more about being a productive content creator, go check out a previous episode I did with one of my very good friends, the famous YouTuber Ali Abdaal, called How to Be Productive. Also, go buy his book, Feel Good Productivity. I recommend his book. That is episode 332 in this feed. Go check out breezedoc.com. That's BREEZEDOC.com. If you hate DocuSign and you hate subscriptions, this is a pay once, get it forever digital signature tool. This is the product I validated on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/okdork. And this will be a seven-figure business in the next 12 months. So if you want to be checking it out, if you want to never pay a subscription again to do electric digital signatures, go to breezedoc.com. Also, special pre-show shout out to listener Luke Com. I often listen to Noah's podcast while working out. I always feel like I'm getting an edge on some of my business competition by listening to Noah's wisdom. Damn, Luke, I wish I was like spotting you while you bench press. I love you, and I love every other one of you gorgeous listeners. Y'all know I do. If you want to shout out in a future episode, just go leave a review on Spotify or on iTunes. It takes literally 25 seconds or less. I check every single one of them, and it really means the world to me and our team.
I was actually shocked. I was looking up your stuff recently. I think you have less than 100 shows.
I am now at 160.
And you started
in 2021.
Yeah, that's super recent.
Yes. So I started like, I don't know, a little. There have been like a few bonuses. So let's say 140 weeks ago.
Okay.
But it was May 2021. So like, maybe we're coming up on 3 years. When I started my show, I was like, I'm going to start a podcast and I'm just going to go do what I'm interested in. And I was like, fortunately, there are people that are interested in what I'm interested in. If there weren't, I probably wouldn't be. I probably wouldn't have a podcast.
Yeah. I mean, you solved the problem, meaning the content wasn't out there. There wasn't someone making that content that you wanted to hear.
Yes.
But if no one listened to it, do you think you would have kept making it? Probably not.
I committed to 8 episodes. I said, I'm going to make 8.
How'd you decide 8?
I don't know. It seemed like a good number. Someone told me that if you make a season, you could just like, you pay, I'm going to make a season and maybe there's just no season 2. Maybe I don't renew my own show for a season 2. Mm. 4 is not a season. Like maybe there was a couple HBO specials that were 6.
Yeah.
It feels like 8 can be a season.
I like that as an approach. That's a nice framework. It seems like you've had significant traction in a short period of time, in a relatively short period of time.
When I went to launch the show, I was like, I love life optimization, life hacks, everything, points, miles, money. And all the content I'd seen on the internet went from super broad to like life hacker, where it was just like everything, to super niche. We were just going to talk about airline points and miles. And I would talk to friends of mine about points and miles. And they'd be like, yeah, I don't want to go listen to a podcast that every week is talking about points and miles, because guess what? And this works every time. Anyone listening, go to thepointsguy.com right now and guaranteed there is an article there that you're like, why do I care about the new leather Lufthansa added to their business class? Like, that is such a niche article that I'm not interested. So I'm like, I love this, but is everybody going to want to go this deep? No. And so I talk to friends at dinner. I'd be like, do you like points and miles? They're like, yeah, I love it. I'm like, great. How often do you want to talk about it? They're like, once a month, once every 2 months.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, cool. I like other stuff. So like, I want to talk about health insurance. I want to talk about privacy. I want to talk about fitness, like
fitness hack, all the hacks.
I'm just going to talk about anything I'm interested in. I'm going to try to either find someone or do the research to go as deep as I can to be as optimal as possible. And it's probably not 80-20 for me, but it's 80-20 for everybody else, because they could just listen to the result of me doing 10 hours of research.
When we were on your show, you were talking about how you like research, but I'm curious, what was going on in your head? Because you were a product manager of Silicon Valley. Are you still in Silicon Valley?
Yeah, I still live in the Bay Area.
What was going on in your head in your day job?
So my career arc was investment banking, management consulting, hated it. Work in startup world, start a company, kind of didn't work, but we were able to sell it to Google for a little bit. Worked at Google.
Which company was that?
It was called Milk. It was a funny thing. I joined the founding team, but I was not the founder, if you would. It was a friend of mine, Kevin Rose, started his company, and he was like, I need somebody to basically do all the things. And I was like, I could do all the things. Like, you want me to find an office? You want me to be accounting? I'll do all whatever crap job needs to be done. I will do it.
Do you know how much they sold for?
Yeah. It was not a big exit. It was like Google bought the company for a few million dollars. And like, we split it across everyone unevenly, which made sense. Like, I was in the lower end of that. Most of it came in the form of like, I got a job at Google. Like, the payout, if you will, was a job at Google with a bunch of Google equity. And then I transferred to Google Ventures, and I worked at Google Ventures for 4 years doing early stage investing. Then I was like, now I'm going to start a company on my own. I'm going to be the founder. I'm going to raise all the money. And we started a company, ran it for 3 years. And then we're like, it doesn't work. And we still had $4 million in the bank, but we're like, I would feel irresponsible spending this $4 million. Like, we validated or unvalidated the hypothesis that this was a good business. We kind of shopped it around. Does anyone want to buy this company? Two companies independently were like, we want to hire your team, like your product engineering team. And then one company is like, we want to be a home for all your customers and your financial advisors, because it was like a financial planning firm. So we kind of like did a split to acquihire deal and landed at Wealthfront. And that was my like product role for 4 years.
So you're a product manager there.
Yes.
And then so you have this day job at Wealthfront. We're going to come back on a few of these things, but you're there. What are you thinking? You're like, hey, I want to go back and have my own thing. Because I think this is the common thread that a lot of people feel. Some people are super happy with their jobs. They're never even considering it. But I talk to people every day, and I'm sure you hear them like, yeah, I kind of want to make more money. I have an idea of it. I guess what was going on in your head while you're at Wealthfront?
When I got to Wealthfront, I was like, I think I could have this job the rest of my life. Look, anyone who runs a company and shuts a company down, by the time you shut your company down, you're like, I don't want to run another company. It's so much work starting the company, like hiring people. And then you shut it down. You're like, wow, that was brutal. That was a lot of work. I'm ready to just have a job where some of those problems are someone else's problems.
Dude, I had an interview with Greg McCowan, you know, Essentialism. Yeah. It was a debate between me and one of the teammates at AppSumo. And we had to debate the other person's side. I had to debate why being an employee or teammate is better than being a CEO and founder. And the Taylor on the team was like, he had to debate my side. And I'm like, dude, being the founder is the best, right? You know, like everything's best. And he's like, well, you know, you have a lot more responsibility and like you never stop. And I'm like, that's true. And so it was really nice to hear all the upsides of being an employee of a business versus only being I assumed after my traumatic experiences getting fired, that's the only way is to run the company. So it was cool to see both sides.
Yeah. And I think what was really important to that was when I joined, the guy running Wealthfront was a guy named Andy Ratcliffe, and storied venture capitalist, started Benchmark, which is one of the best returning venture capital firms of all time. You know, taught the class at Stanford on product market fit, coined the term, like so much you can learn from a person like that. I was like, as long as I'm learning and I'm having fun and I'm in charge of a thing. So it's kind of like I had a thing I could run, but it wasn't the company. And I came in and they were like, we want to build self-driving money. That was the vision. It was like, automate all of your finances. You don't have to think about it. And they're like, go build it. And I was like, well, what is it? And they're like, figure it out. Like, so we had some ideas. Like, it wasn't just a complete blank slate, but it felt like you were kind of a founder, but without all the, I didn't have to hire people.
HR,
I didn't have to deal with HR. Although lawsuits. The new trend is no HR. The All In podcast, which is like four Silicon Valley VCs, one of them started a company. He's like, you know, we're not doing HR anymore. We're doing a retained external legal firm to handle all of the complaints, which in some ways works better. Because if you have a problem with the company, instead of telling your colleague, tell a law firm that will take it seriously. And then all the other functions, like accounting, and like, they just got rid of the like human resources thing. And they're like, when we got to do benefits each year, we'll form a committee of people across the company. They'll pick the benefits package and then we'll disband the committee and they won't exist. And I was like,
He's just starting this company?
Yeah.
They're just starting.
Yeah, we'll find out how
that works. Yeah, like,
we'll see.
There's, you know, sometimes there's like new wisdom that is true and it's great that they question it, but there's also sometimes, like, you know, women have babies because they're the ones that can have babies. It's worked that way for a while, you know. Anyways, I'm curious to see how that goes. It's definitely something like that reconsideration.
But I thought I could do it forever. And then, you know, like a couple years in, you're like, well, I could do this, but I want to do it this way. And not everyone wants to do it this way. You kind of start to have these feelings of like, I want to make the decision and I'm not in charge. That was part of it. But I also just started this podcast on the side. I was like, you know what? I didn't think this could be my $1 million, you know, weekend side hustle. I just thought I'll start a podcast. I'll run 8 episodes and I'll see what happens. And it worked. I took every audience I'd ever built on any newsletter, on any channel, and I called in all the favors and said, I'm launching this podcast. If you could share it, it would be awesome. And one guy who has a huge YouTube, Facebook video following called Nasir Yassin, he runs a channel called Nas Daily.
Yeah.
He made a video about me and all my credit card points. And he was like, we're going to launch it. And I was like, I'm not getting paid for this. That's fine. Could you put like 3 seconds of, and Chris launched a podcast about this called All the Hacks. So he put this 3-second ad for the podcast in a video that ended up getting 40 million views. And the day he launched the video, I was like, it's launch time. Like, that was the day I launched the podcast. And it was enough traction that out the gates, we had like a real audience. So I was like, oh, wow. By episode 3 or 4, I was like, well, we're going to be past 8.
What gave you that clarity?
I mean, to be in the top like 1% of podcasts, you need like 4,000 downloads an episode. And to be in a land where you could actually monetize a podcast, you probably need at least 10,000 downloads an episode. And this is consumer. If you have a really niche podcast for veterinarians, you could probably monetize it with 500 listeners, right? You know, but for a consumer facing podcast, and we were at over 10,000 downloads out the gate per episode. So it was like, we're now in the top 0.5% of podcasts right away. It was cool. Like, it really resonated with people. And then they stuck around. And I was like, we need more episodes because I'd only planned the 8.
Oh, did you already pre-record the 8?
I pre-recorded about 6 of them. I scheduled 2 of them. And once we launched, like 2 weeks in, I was like, oh, we can keep going. I need to find episode 9 and 10 and 11. And it just became a thing that I was doing on the side. And then about a year in, I was like, this feels like it's big enough that it could be a business. This guy cold emailed me. He's like, I worked at a podcast. I sold all of our sponsorships. I feel like you could do that. And I was like, huh. Okay, let's see. And then it was like, oh, now it's making money. I should put more time and energy into it. And I just couldn't focus on the day job because I just had this thing that was like working. And by the way, I'd started like 3 companies in my life, none of them which worked. Now I finally have this thing that started on the side. It wasn't even supposed to be a company and it was working better than every company I'd started before.
So first off, you had started a lot of things. I think people, they never get to the start.
Yes.
They're just like, they're talking to their friends at dinner. They're bugging their wife. They're like frustrated and blaming the government. They're watching a lot of YouTubes, but they're not starting. I think this is another thing that was really interesting is most of the things we kind of take as a joke, not even as a joke, but just like as a hobby. And then we're not putting so much pressure for it to have to succeed, can succeed.
Yes.
Right. Like even AppSumo, it wasn't like I'm trying to create a company and hire anyone. I was just trying to make $3,000 and get a deal on software. Like that wasn't the whole intent. It wasn't anything beyond that. And it worked. And then I took it very lightly for a year. And after a year, I was like, okay, this did $300,000. Something's happening here.
Yeah, it works.
And it was working. It's like, okay, maybe I'll go more into this thing. And versus I think people have so much pressure on there that it has to succeed or not versus like being mindful of having fun with the experience. The other thing you're very good at, Chris, the reason I said yes to you coming on this show is because you asked. You asked.
You just have to ask.
How did you get comfortable at asking? Where did you develop? Because I think you asked Nas. You asked me. You called in all the favors, right? I think a lot of people, again, they're not asking and you seem to be skilled at it.
So I never liked authority as a kid. Like at school, I was just like, why? This doesn't make sense. Why would we do it this way? When I went to university, I asked the teacher of this class. It was like a computer class that everyone has to take to learn Word and Office. And I was like, I already know all this. Do I have to take this class? And they were like, well, do you want to take the final now? And if you can pass the final, you can get a passing grade. I was like, yes. And then like that day after class, I just took the final and got a passing grade. And I was like, oh, can I do this with other classes? And I ended up like asking teachers like, oh, can I take this class? Yeah, you can take this. Oh, I already took calculus. Can I just get past calculus? Yeah, you could pass calculus.
Mm.
It just kind of reinforced. It's like a flywheel. Like you start asking, people say yes, then you ask again. And then you get good at asking even when people, I have a great example this morning. So part of the membership for All the Hacks, we do these member calls and we like points and miles. And so the founder of this company, Aways, which is a tool for searching hotel awards, is going to do a demo and walk people through exactly how the product works, answer all these questions. And we were like, hey, do you want to give away anything to the listeners? And he's like, well, don't we already give all your members 50% off? And we were like, yeah, but if you wanted to do anything more, like a free membership, he's like, okay, we'll do 3. And I was like, at first instinct, I was like, don't we already give 50%? Sounded like he was saying, why would we possibly give something away? But he was just clarifying to make sure he understood, and that following up and be like, it's totally fine if you don't want to, but if you do, we could give something away. And now three members are going to get a free like $100 a year membership.
Which pays for your thing by itself, right?
Yeah, the membership's $100. So we have enough perks that if you just join and you want to do estate planning, you'll save more than the cost. But I don't know, people just need to ask. And then you just find that people say yes, and then you ask more, and then they say yes. And and you can do this in the context of like asking for a discount at the coffee shop, right?
Coffee challenge, or yeah, asking for a raise, or asking off money off your bills. It's kind of crazy when you start out, you're like, oh my God, they say yes.
Yeah.
What have been some of your best asks and best no's?
So the best ask, when you have data, it works really well. So I remember when I was negotiating my salary at Wealthfront, they were like, this is how much we're going to pay you. And if I had gone back and said, well, I want more, I now know this in hindsight that Andy, the CEO, would have been like, why would I give you more? But instead, I went and downloaded. I was in a slightly fortunate position because as the founder of a company, I had access to some of these tools with salary benchmarks. So I just downloaded all this benchmarking data. And by the way, it takes 2 minutes to download. So if you ever know anyone who runs any company, you could probably ask them,
they
hey,
all have it.
So could you give me access to this? And I like put together a thing. I was like, well, based on all of this information, I should get paid this. And he was like, oh, like I guess I can't really argue. Like, because he had told me, he's like, we want to pay people, you know, 50th percentile or whatever wage. And like, you've now shown me that the 50th percentile is higher. So it wasn't even an ask, really. And I did that with my employees. I was like, I'll pay you 50th percentile. And they were like, can I get 10 grand more a year? I was like, if you could show me the data that the 50th percentile is 10 grand higher, of course. One person came back and said, well, I'm not gonna show you that. I'm gonna show you why I should be a level higher. Like, I'm not a level six, I'm a level seven. And he was like, here's three people you can call that I worked for that would tell you that based on how you define where you think I am, I'm higher. So we gave him a raise. Like, we gave him that next level. And those worked. A really fun one, which is, so my first thing that I started was called Laid Off Camp. So I got laid off in 2008. I'm not gonna get a job, it's November. Like, what's going on? So I was like, well, what if we started a conference? And funny enough, I went to Austin for South By in 2007, and there was this thing called Bar Camp, and it was like a nerdy bunch of people getting in a room, unconference vibes. I was like, what if we just did that for unemployed people? Where it was like a bunch of people who got laid off. Like, I don't know whether we start companies together. Why don't people teach people things? I'm not sure, but I don't have anything to do with my time. So I started it, and I remember right before it started that morning, I was like, I wanted to get as much media coverage as possible. And I'd already sent out the like, we're doing this event. I remember I called all the local TV, like local Fox, local ABC, local NBC. And I said, hey, I'm just calling from Laid Off Camp. We have a list of the reporters coming from, insert the three that weren't them, like from Fox, ABC, NBC. I didn't have anyone from your team who's on the list. So just wanted to make sure if you guys were sending people, I had the list. All of them showed up because all of them were like, wait, everyone else is going. We should be going. And I'm not sure if they would have gone otherwise, but we ended up having like CNN there and NPR. Like it ended up being a big thing, and it would hit the zeitgeist, and I didn't actually make any money because it wasn't a company, but it was fun. And that was one where I was just like, it's kind of like a creative ask.
Yeah.
I was like, we're going to let you know you probably should be here. But no's happen all the time. I fundraised for a company. I probably got 1,000 no's. Like, do you want to give me money? No. But the lesson there is, when you're asking someone for something and it's hard for them to say yes, or like, you know, it's not an obvious yes, give them a really easy out, because people hate saying no. So in the world of raising money for a company, you say, hey, we're raising money. Do you want to write a check? They're like, well, I got to think about it. I want to talk to my partners. Like, I don't know if it's the right time. And I would always write an email that said, hey, things are moving along quickly. If you're interested, let's chat. If not, no worries. And then 90% of them were like, all right, not interested. Like, I gave them an easy way to say no, because the last thing you want to do when you're making lots of asks is spend all your time waiting for someone who then's going to say no. So it's like, make the ask and then make the no so easy. And in some circumstances, if you go to a coffee shop and you're like, can I have a discount? The no is easy. But when you're asking like a friend for a favor, someone's like, oh, can you do this thing for me? You could just see them on the other side like, oh, yeah. Really? If not, doesn't matter.
That's such a great point. When I was doing for the Million Dollar Weekend, like book tour promo, I asked Nat Eliason, you know this guy? He's popular on Twitter. He used to work at AppSumo. I let him go because he was not meant to have a job. And I said, hey, can I send you the book? No pressure. And he said, no, don't send it. I don't want it. And I was like, I was actually excited. I was like, I respect you. I'm a little annoyed. And I appreciated that he was honest. And so as I started messaging other people, I would just say, hey, no pressure if you don't want it. And most people would say yes. A few did, others say no. And I also kind of admired it. And then I also asked, this was a kind of an uncomfortable one, but after I sent out the book, I'd be, hey, do you mind sharing about the book today? And yeah, it's definitely, even for, you know, people like you and me who I think we're askers, we've realized like the power of it, the upside of it. I don't know. Sometimes you feel, do you feel uncomfortable ever asking?
Sometimes. The thing that's most uncomfortable for me is asking and then shutting up. Someone pauses and I'm like, oh, hey, Noah, can I come on your podcast? And then you're like silent for a second. I'm like, well, no. I just got to be quiet. See what happens. Wait. So I get uncomfortable after the ask more than I do before the ask. But sometimes when it's a person I don't know that well, or in general, I try to add value to people's lives, irregardless of an ask. And then karma seems to like pay back sometime in the future.
What do you tell yourself before the ask?
It doesn't really matter. Like, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? They're going to be like, no. If you make the no easy, it's like, no. So that's probably what I tell myself.
Because I saw you interviewed Tim a few years ago.
Yes.
For his show.
Yes.
How'd you ask that?
That was a great ask. So I remember I sent Tim a bunch of questions and I said, hey, I'm launching this podcast. I have so many questions for you. I went ahead of time and he'd done an interview with Rolf Potts where he talked about podcasting. And he'd written a blog post about it. I read all of that. So none of my questions had been answered on one of the things he'd already talked about this. So that's one. Don't waste someone's time. So I didn't want to make an ask that someone else could get the answer to. And funny enough, the guy that works for Tim has this great policy where he won't ask you a question unless he's already spent 15 minutes trying to find the answer. So it's like, I'm not asking you those questions. I sent him like 10 questions all about podcasts, growing, interviewing. And at the end, and I was like, and I would love to be a guest on your podcast. And then his response was, did you make up those 10 questions so that you could seem like we're having a dialogue only to ask me to be on my podcast? And I was like, no, if you don't want me on your podcast, say no. I still want to know the answer to the 10 questions. And he was like, why don't you come on the podcast and ask me the 10 questions? And we'll do an episode about growing a podcast. So like we did this episode. It was like 2.5 hours long. If anyone out there wants to create content, it was like a masterclass, if you will, on everything Tim's learned. At the time, it was like 700 million downloads, which is way more downloads than I've gotten. And it was just like genuinely made it easy for him to say no, but actually was interested in something, not just a bunch of fluff. But he even called it out. He was like, this is bullshit, right? I was like, no, it's not. I really care.
Well, you wanted the questions answered. And then it's interesting, you also threw in the ask because it's like, what could happen? He says yes, and you come on the show and you go public with him, or he just says no.
And I wasn't actually thinking about those two things being the same. I was like, I got this podcast. I thought, have me on the show. We could talk about, I don't know, life optimization. I don't know what it was. But when he proposed that, I was like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't pitch that. In hindsight, I should have pitched that. That would have been a great idea. Hey, can I come on your show and interview you about everything you've learned about podcast growth? Obviously, it would have resonated because he said yes. But he's so good at saying no and being honest.
He's very good at saying no.
Some people say no and you don't understand. He told me, he's like, I don't want you on the show because right now I'm just not interested in the things that you know a lot of about. Like, I don't care about using my points more optimally. It's not interesting to me right now.
Oh, is this the second time or the initial?
That was the initial time. That's why he didn't want me on the show for the ask. He was like, no, because I'm just not interested in what you would talk about right now. Maybe later in life, I'll realize, wow, I have 40 million Amex points. I've never done anything. I'll be interested. We'll have you on. But now I'm not. Yeah. So I was like, that's fair. And now I use it all the time. Someone says, can I do this? I'm like, no. Sorry.
It's like, you know, when you say no and you know, you didn't want to. Sometimes I'm saying yes. And I'm like, I don't really want to say yes. Like this show, I was definitely like, I said yes. And I was like, did I really want to do it? And it's probably not now. But then I was like, you know what? He's here in town. I wanted to follow through with it. And this is actually way better than I expected.
Anytime you want to make an ask, if you want a yes, make a yes easy.
100%.
So I get pitched a lot for people coming on the show. And sometimes people are like, it's usually a PR person. And it's like, oh, we have this guest. They're going to be amazing. They're going to talk about how they grew a business. And I was like, if you looked in 160 episodes, I've done zero about growing a business. None of them are like, this person built a pet nail trimming business from zero to $10,000, you know, whatever. I never say yes to that. And then every now and then someone has a pitch that's like, oh, they listen to the show. Oh,
yeah.
They understand what I try to do with each episode, which is obvious if anyone just looks at all the titles, even without listening, you get an idea. And if you can be the person that says, hey, I understand what you do. This is what I think would be a great agenda for an amazing conversation that would fit your audience. You still will get no's because I've gotten them. But you'll get a lot more yeses by making it easy for them to say, I've already scripted out the entire agenda.
You've done the work and then you send that to them. Because versus they send you the PR release. They're like, here's the press release with the person. You pushed back on me a little bit. I think you said, hey, what's the title? I think I came back with a few options of things we're going to talk about.
Yes, you did. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay. I thought I did.
My challenge was, I was like, I'm not just going to do a, like, I want to figure out what is the thing. Because my audience is not mostly entrepreneurs. So just talking about starting a business might not be the most interesting thing. focusing on the side hustle, focusing on a lot of the skills that can apply to people in any job, focusing on how you can do it within a company. So we came up with something. I thought it was a great episode.
Pretty good. Coming back on a few things here. One, I actually like talking about the ask. It's not where I thought it was going to go, but I love that because I think there's good stories, good examples, like from raises, from discounts on anything, really. Like you literally can ask for anything.
And discounts, always. So your coffee example might not work that much. Here's my example that works all the time.
I don't want mine to work. That's my point, but yes, please.
So rejection therapy is like another thing. The live chat on websites when you're checking out online. So my favorite thing is getting the best deal, right? So it's like, how do you stack everything so that even though you're paying $1,000 for something, you're getting it for like $700 and not used. Like you're not like going to get it around the corner and it's half broken. So I always ask live chat. I'm like, hey, is there any deal going on right now? Or like, can you give me a promo? Can you give me a discount? I'm like, 30% of the time, someone on live chat's like, here's a promo code. Or one time someone's like, I just updated your cart. And I was like, well, that's pretty cool software that you can update my cart remotely. And they're like, we just added a 20% discount on floor mats. And I was like, thank you. Always ask the live chat for a deal.
We've got a sponsor I've got to give some love to. And no, they didn't even pay for this. I just love their product so much and want to give them some love and encourage you to check them out. It is LMNT, or as some people call it, Element. It is electrolytes. It is salt. I use it almost every single day and definitely every single time I am cycling. You probably have seen these guys on Tim Ferriss. You've probably seen it with Lance Armstrong. You've seen it? Noah Kagan. Holy shit. They have a free pack with free shipping. That's my favorite prices at drinklmnt.com/Noah Kagan. That's drinklmnt.com/Noah Kagan. My favorite flavor is raspberry, and I hate raspberry.
I was filming with Ali Abdaal. You can ask for free hotel rooms. They literally will email and say, hey, we're going to do interviews in your hotel. We'll feature your hotel. Can I have a free room? Like, I was in this like poor hotel across the street. Like, I don't know. I don't care about hotels. I just sleep and leave. But he had this like baller ass room. I was like, dude, how much was this? He's like, free. So that was just because of an ask.
This is the problem with podcasting though. So there's no public number. Like, I can tell you that I think we have about 350,000 subscribers to the podcast. And I can tell you that if you compare a YouTube episode and how many people are listening at an hour in to a podcast, it's like four times as many people are listening an hour in on a podcast as YouTube, at least from like three or four podcasts data that I've looked at. The YouTube retention curve is low. So when you look at YouTube, you're like, wow, you have a million views. And it's like, well, on a podcast, that's 250,000 views. And it's kind of the same listener retention. So if I email people, I'm like, hey, do you want to let me in? They're like, you have 10,000 Twitter followers. Like, why am I going to give you a hotel room?
Well, that's a whole separate discussion. Coming back on some of these things around your podcast and your career, can you share any numbers how the business is doing? I was curious your revenue streams, and I was just curious like the size. Because I was like, see the podcast. I see that it's highly ranked. I see that you have like a deal section.
Yeah.
I guess I was curious like what this all added up to and what's like the 80-20 of how it's operating.
Yeah. So when I left my job as a PM at Wealthfront, the podcast was making more than I made at Wealthfront. It's a six-figure, hopefully soon seven-figure business, but it is not yet a seven-figure business.
Okay. And then how much are you making at Wealthfront?
I think like my salary was like $240.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I think so.
I guess in the Bay, that's like
that's like making 50 grand a year somewhere else.
Which is people, if you don't, if you're not in the Bay, that's poverty. I mean, 250 is like, you can barely afford a condo. Like on one salary like that, your wife must have to make a lot too. And just to give people context of like, the Bay is expensive.
I wouldn't go as far as poverty, but I would say renting a multi-bedroom house in a good part of town somewhere in the Bay Area is going to cost you like over $5,000 a month. So that's kind of, I think that's...
All right, so six figures-ish, maybe on seven sometime this year or next. And then can you break down a high level the... So I saw you had deals, then you had a membership thing, and then maybe you have like, can you break out different revenue streams from it?
Podcasts primarily monetized through sponsors. Sponsors basically buy a 60-second ad. Spotify released some data, like the average podcast, and it's an hour long, does 7 to 8 ads. And so that's one is sponsors. We do 5 per episode.
Who's your agency or how do you get them?
We do all that in-house.
So it's all inbound?
No. It's me and this guy that cold emailed me and was like, hey, can I help you sell ads? And I was like, yeah. And now he full-time works for me. And then I feel like we figured out podcast monetization well enough that there's 2 or 3 other shows that we help monetize. So we have like a little mini agency.
Can I hire you guys?
We could talk.
Was that a no? Was that a nice no?
No. We could talk. I want to make sure my reaction here as people think about this. To the extent your audience is more business focused than consumer focused, the overlap of brands we work with might not make sense. There's this guy, Lenny Rachitsky, who has a podcast for product managers. The average podcasting CPM is like $20. His is like over $100 because everyone that listens to his podcast is like a purchasing decision maker at a big company. Hmm. And so I don't know where your audience is to know if it's the right fit for the brands we work with.
They're great. They're good looking. They're super nice. They're family people.
Yeah.
Good looking young guys too. Young ladies.
All right, so you have podcast sponsors is one. Then, you know, we talk a lot about credit card points and miles. And the greatest thing about the credit card points and miles world is that companies make money when you sign up for a credit card and they pay an affiliate fee when people do that. And I'd say for the most part, the deal you're going to get anywhere is the same deal you're going to get through an affiliate link. Not everyone does this, but we'll just call it out. So like right now, if you wanted the Hilton Aspire card, the best deal is not through our affiliate links. So I tell people on the podcast, if you want this 175,000 point welcome bonus, go straight to the Amex website. Don't go to our links because I'd rather you get the best deal than us make some money. But if you're looking to get a card and we have the best links, do that. Support the show.
All right. So sponsors.
Credit cards. Other affiliates is like a much smaller thing, but the credit card affiliates is a big one since we talk about points and miles a lot. We have a membership that's pretty small, but it's kind of like something that we're spending a lot of time on. We are organizing a trip to Iceland in the fall. I don't know if we'll actually make money on trip one, but the idea is I started doing these episodes where I interviewed people that are experts on places. And then people emailed me and they're like, that was the most amazing thing. I want to plan the trip you described. And I was like, why don't we just organize it? So we sold the trip out in the first 2 weeks. We have 16 people going to Iceland. I'm going to go on the first one at least. And then people were like, I want to go, but I can't go that week. And I'm like, great, we'll double it back. We'll do it two or three or four times a year. And we're doing one in Japan next year. Like, we'll just start running these trips because we've now found a person who knows everything. We've run an episode talking about the trip, which has gotten dozens of people interested in taking that trip with that person. Mm. And so then they're like, how do I go on the Iceland trip with Brandon?
I saw you had like a deal section.
Yeah, so the deal stuff is, I'd say 80% partners and affiliate partners, and then 20% just deals we source that we can't make any money on, but are good enough to share with the audience. So if you go to allthehacks.com/deals, there's probably like 30, 40 deals on there.
Yeah, I saw that.
Some of them are sponsor partner deals. Some of them are just like, we got a great deal, so we're going to share it with you because, and if we can't make money, that's fine. I know people like deals. And some of them are like, they're sponsors. We don't make money when you do them. Like when you go buy something from our sponsors, we don't make money, but they might renew their sponsorship. So it indirectly helps, but we don't make any money.
And is the revenue in that order more or less? So like ad sponsorships is number one.
Ads is one. Credit cards is number two. Everything else combined is number three. And then this agency thing is probably number two or three, or on pace to be number two or three. Like, I feel like we've nailed podcast growth and monetization to a degree that most people haven't. Mm. Because most people don't start podcasts and think like, I'm going to be a nerd about the data and the analytics. They're just like, I want to record a podcast.
Yeah, get it out there.
And so we've gone deep enough that a couple people are like, can you just do this for us? And I don't really want to run like a big agency, but if we have three or four clients and we can help them make millions of dollars a year, that'd be cool.
Tell me about the real quickly, just super quick, the membership section. Because I think you have like the standard playbook for podcasts is sponsorships, maybe affiliate links, maybe some other things. I like that you're kind of experimenting with like a membership model on that.
So here was my long-term idea. I was like, gosh, if the market crashes and brands pull out all their revenue, are they going to want to advertise? What are we going to do? Because now this is my job. My wife quit her job, which she was making more than I was, to join the podcast.
Oh, what'd your wife do?
She ran BD at Lyft for 10 years and then ran BD also at Wealthfront.
You guys meet at Wealthfront?
No, we met in college.
Oh, okay.
Long time ago. And so we were like, well, what if we could, and this is like a longer term vision, we could go to all these brands and say, hey, give us a deal for our audience that's even better than the deal that you would give anyone else. Because all those other deals that you're giving people, you're paying marketing dollars behind also. So you don't have to pay us, just give us the best deals. And then we'll Costco model, right? Like we'll make money from a membership that offers the best deals because we're not making money on the products that we offer deals on. It is a hard business to start because the number of members you need to have like a 6-7 figure business charging $100 a year is a massive number. And in order for someone to want to continue to pay $100 a year, they need to be getting more than $100 of value. So you need enough deals that they're going to get $100 of value each year. So we're like basically slowly building out the pool of deals to the point that one day we could maybe slowly start to move advertisers from advertisers on the podcast to premium deals. We'll fill their ad spots with our own promotion of what we offer the membership. That's an idea.
Cool hedge.
Might not happen. Right now, if you ask members why they're members, they're like, I just love the content and I wanted to support you.
A few things kind of coming back. So you started a thing that you worked 3 years on. Now, you know, $1 million weekend, as well as this all the hacks business, like what could you have done differently to within that?
Yeah. So we started an online financial planning firm. Hypothesis was most people are stressed about money, don't know what to do. and need help, and they don't want to go see some old dude in a suit, and they don't want to do it themselves. So financial planning was a great process where you work with someone and you plan out your life, but it was expensive and it was old school. Let's do it online, less expensive. It worked, except that it's never a priority. It's not like taxes where it's like your taxes are due April 15th, so you have to get them done. Everyone just punted. And so I'll tell you what I would have done differently, but at the outset, we were like, well, we don't want to build this company if there's not demand. And so we were like, let's launch this product before we've built it, and we'll take a wait list, but we'll make people pay to be on the wait list. Because if you just have a wait list, who cares? So we charged $100 for you to wait in line to be a customer of a financial planning firm. We had hundreds of people pay $100 to wait in line.
What was it called?
It was called Grove.
Grove?
Grove.
How many people did you get on the wait list?
I want to say we probably peaked the wait list like 1,000 people. So we were like, wow, people want this. Let's go raise money.
You're like, we're going to be rich.
No, it's too early for that. But we were like, this works. Let's raise money. Because we had to go build the product and do all this stuff. We didn't go far enough down that path for two reasons. One, 1,000 people was not enough. Even at a premium price, finding the first 1,000 was like an order of magnitude easier than finding the next 1,000. Like getting to 10,000 was like astronomically impossible. And then the second thing was converting people off the waitlist. I assumed that if you were willing to put $100 down, when it was your turn, you'd be willing to sign up. I was wrong. I would say less than 50% of the people that put $100 down would convert over to paid when we said, hey, it's your turn. And we'd say, great, we'll give you your money back. And they were like, no, I want to stay on the waitlist. I'm not ready to do it now, but I want to lock in that deal that you gave me by putting on the waitlist. So we were like, okay. And then we'd follow up. Like we were around for 3 years. Some people for 2 years, we'd be like, are you ready? Not now, but don't take me off. Don't give me my $100 back. Not now. And so for 2 years, we tried to convert people off the waitlist, and we could convert some, but just not anywhere near even half. But they didn't want to leave. So it was like everyone wanted to become a customer of a financial planning firm next month. No one wanted to do it this month. And for a scalable business, like you need people that want to be customers now.
And so if you did need the VCs, is it the wrong problem? Is it the wrong approach? Like how would you have revisited it, if at all?
I would have tried to find a way to acquire more than 1,000 customers without a wait list. And I would have immediately found that the cost to do that was too expensive and we wouldn't have started the company.
Is there also an approach where you could have taken like, hey, okay, wait, listen, people said they want it. Let's build it with them and see if they'll actually pay for the product versus the VC approach?
Yeah, I think we could have also built this as a slow business.
Well, and seeing if people would actually pay, then you'd be like, holy shit, they're not converting to pay.
Yeah, so they like we did have over 1,000 customers who did pay, but getting them fast enough, it was just so slow. So like there are lots of successful financial planners out there and that's a good business, but it just can't grow that fast because you're bringing in customers slowly by word of mouth. It would be a great business for someone to run. But in order to bring the price point down that more people would do it, you needed to build software to automate a lot of it. I think what will happen over time is someone will go build the automation software, sell it to financial planners so that they can lower their prices and they can run a bunch of non-scalable good businesses. And then the software company that built that software might be a good scalable high growth business. But it did not work. And since then, I've had like 20 people email me and they're like, hey, I want to start a company. It's just like what you were doing. And I was like, can you acquire 1,000 customers? They're like, no, we're going to build the software and find out. I was like, no, you should just find out if you could buy ads.
It's kind of to me, a counterintuitive story because it's like, oh, it showed demand, but it wasn't actual demand. It was like, hey, yes, I want it, but I'm not actually going to use it. I'm not actually going to pay for it or a smaller amount.
Yeah. It was like, I want it, but I don't want it now.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. It's like Tesla. I don't even want to know how many people have a deposit for a Cybertruck, but how many of them actually want one? Or the Vision Pro is this great example. Everybody's buying Apple Vision Pro and then returning it.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the demand for Vision Pros that you keep for 31 days? And if they took deposits on the Vision Pro, I would have put a deposit down.
A few things. One of the new approaches that I'm experimenting with is looking up people's most popular things. So I went to Twitter, searched Chris Hutchinson, last 4 years, most popular tweets. You don't have any. You don't have, and I'm not saying that as like as an insult. I looked for like tweets that got at least 50 likes. And the Tim one was one of them. That's okay. How I thought of the Tim thing. And another one was like, you wanted to name a product. So you had like a page of all these product ideas. So I was kind of working backwards from like, what is the content or things that would be, you know, publicly as well as you might be interested in. But I love that you prepared from this side. Two questions around it. Number one, my wife just came to America. What's the All the Hacks starter pack? Because she doesn't have a credit card. She doesn't have like any of this stuff. So it's like for someone new to America, like the basic, the core.
I mean, I'm surprised at how quickly companies will issue you credit cards. So we have an au pair. And like by the end of year one, she was getting like pre-approved for an Amex Platinum. Like these cards that are typically like for high credit score people, right now she's getting pre-approved offers for all of them. So like once you get a bank account, once you get a social, all of a sudden, like you're going to get all these cards. for anyone who's listening that isn't in America, like basically everything in America is like 2 to 10% off because of credit cards. Now, if you can't pay your bills, everything is like 50% more expensive.
Oh, that's interesting.
But basically, all the points and miles you earn from paying with a credit card can fund tens of thousands of dollars of travel a year, which is like my whole life was, I don't want these crappy jobs that I got laid off from. And so how do I spend the littlest amount of money without sacrificing quality of life? So like the birth of my optimizing personality was, I don't want to spend money because I don't have it, but I still like traveling and like doing cool stuff. Like I didn't want to sacrifice. And so it was like, how do you find a way to get all of the things you would want at a lower cost? And some of those things can be free flights. This is where play the points and miles game. Some of it can be deals like Ask Live Chat or go through shopping portals to get cash back.
What do you think like the top three would be for someone like her? Like what's the credit card? Maybe what's the site? Maybe, you know, besides listening to your show, all the hacks podcast.
I would say whatever you spend the most money on, there's a card that'll maximize that. If it's travel and dining, pick that card. If it's groceries, pick that card. If there's really nothing, go get a 2% card. If you're the kind of person that's flexible enough to take a vacation where you're like, we'll change the dates or like, we'll go somewhere in Europe, but we don't know where, you'll probably double the value to triple the value of your cash back by doing points. If you're someone who's like, when I want to travel, I want to do it on this day, on this airline, on the direct flight, and I'm taking four people and I don't want any other changes, then cash back is going to be your way to go. But if you're like, you know what? You tell me I can go to Europe in business class for half the price of coach if I am flexible with where and when, I'm all in. You're playing the points game and you're coming out ahead.
What are some of these newer sites that people can use to optimize points? You mentioned one earlier that's a sponsor, Aways.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of companies that have made it easier to do this. And so the easiest example is one that I'll give to people because it's free. If you have an Amex account or if you sign up for Bilt, which is a rewards currency tied to a credit card, but you don't even need the credit card to sign up for Bilt Rewards. You can join their rewards program without having the credit card. They both have tools that let you use a product called PointMe, point.me. is the website, and you can use it for free through Amex or through Bilt, and they just let you search for, are there points flights on these days? There's a couple other ones, Points Yeah, Seats.Aero, Rome Travel. There are a bunch of these popping up that let you kind of inspire yourself with where you could go with your points and find better deals and get the most use.
So I have, because of AppSumo, I have millions of points,
yeah,
which has been super lucky. You know, if, when I go to Spain, that's where my wife is from, or she's from Venezuela, but she lives in Spain. Different days and different airlines will have a first class flight just way cheaper.
Yes.
What's the site to be able to find like, hey, if you go Monday instead of Tuesday on this airline, you're going to have a better first class.
Yeah, so most of the free sites don't let you do these multi-date searches.
Or just, I'm looking for the best option across different dates.
Yeah, yeah. All of these are the best options across different airlines. Many of them let you search different days. The one I really like right now is called Award Tool. And you could say like across these days, and then they'll search all that. Or if you're listening and you're like, I have money, I don't have time, if you search award booking services or go to PointMe, they have a concierge service. You pay about $200 a person. You say, I have all these points. I want to go to Spain. Figure it out.
Sometimes they don't find the shortest duration. That's the only part that
you got to tell them. You say, this is what I want to optimize for.
Because they're like, you can have it for, you know, I don't know how many thousand points, 100,000. It's like you have to go through 4 days.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that.
I recorded an episode last week. It hasn't come out as of recording, but whenever this comes out, maybe it is, with a guy, Greg from Frequent Miler, which is a blog all about points and miles. And we went through every single award tool. So like in the next 3 weeks, that'll be out. It's like, here are all the tools. Here's how to use them. Here's what they work. We're going to put it on YouTube because we don't do a lot on YouTube. But I recorded my screen through the whole episode.
Two final things. One, how does someone grow a podcast? So this podcast has kind of like been, and I love the audience. You guys are all gorgeous. But it's been flat for years now, more or less.
It is very hard to grow a podcast. I'm surprised. Well, you just went on this giant podcast tour to promote a book.
It's gone up since then.
But the biggest challenge is people that don't listen to podcasts, don't listen to podcasts. So the reason I don't post a lot on Twitter is because it turns out most people on Twitter don't click over and then listen to a podcast. Most people on Instagram, Reels, and watching TikTok videos, they don't listen to podcasts. So you can put all this content out there, and that's great. But if those people aren't going to listen to the podcast, and the podcast is your business, that's why you don't see any like tweets. Because I found that no matter how much I post on Twitter, it doesn't lean.
Dude, I love that.
Doesn't turn into podcast listeners. I'm focused on podcast listeners, which means going on other podcasts, buying ads on other podcasts, doing cross promos with other podcasts, getting creative. So coming back as like a good close the loop here, I really wanted to go on the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast. It's like the biggest real estate podcast. Guess what? I don't know that much about real estate. I know more than the average person, but I'm not a real estate expert. I took the lesson from going on Tim's show and I pitched them. I said, hey guys, you guys are always interviewing people about real estate. What if I came on your show and interviewed you guys about everything you need to know, all the hacks to buy a home? And they were like, well, that sounds really cool. We get to be the stars on our own show. And then we aired it on their show and I aired it on my show. So I looked at the conversion and we got like 3% of their audience came over and listened to our show. So now I'm like, okay, so I can offer my skills as a host. I did all the prep work. I sent them a doc. Here's all the topics. I made it easy for them. They were like, I don't have to do much work here. Like, this is great.
And then do you say, hey, check out my show on this show? This is a really good idea.
Yeah, of course. I was like, check out my show. Another friend of mine, and he actually did this for me, but it's a tactic anyone can use. He emailed me and said, hey, I really want to interview Bill Perkins. So Bill Perkins wrote a book that I think everyone
listening. I've been loving to interview Bill Perkins.
Yeah. Okay. So here's what he pitched me. He said, I really want to interview Bill Perkins. He wrote this book, Die with Zero, that if you're listening, it's an excellent book.
Banger book.
If you don't like reading, I did an interview with him, episode 91. We'll put it in the show notes. Another tip. Always recommend people put in the show notes. And he was like, you did such a great job interviewing him. Why should I go waste his time to create another piece of content that's going to be 99% what yours is? Can I just air your episode in my feed without all the ads? I'll strip out the ads. I'll do my own intro. And then I'll just say, hey, Chris from All the Hacks has this podcast. He did a great interview. Can I air it? And I was like, of course. Like, you're going to drive listeners to me. And you don't have to do anything for a week. Like, he wants to have a podcast and he doesn't have to make an episode that week. I thought about this strategy and like, oh, this is interesting. Like, how could I do this? And then also leveraging a trade here. So let's say I go to someone and say, hey, you did this great episode on this topic. I would love to air your episode on my feed. It's going to drive a lot of listeners. Here's the data. Like, I've done the analysis. It's going to probably drive 4% of my audience to you. If I did that, would you be willing to run a 30-second cross promo for my show for a month or in an episode? And multiple times people are like, yeah, totally. That's a great trade, because I don't have ad inventory to promote your show as much as I'd want you to promote my show, but I could run an episode. If you did a great interview, why not?
And you could put your ads on their episode.
Oh yeah. I'll put my ads
on their episode,
on my feed. Yeah, for sure.
How many downloads an episode are you generally getting? Or like within 30 days?
Within 90 days, we're right around 50,000.
These are the stuff that you can kind of apply in other businesses too. This is just like, but it's also you're a master of one. And I love that you're not doing a lot of Twitter. And your intentionality and strategy behind it is very smart.
I feel like I just went so deep on podcasting that now all these people I know are like, hey, can I talk to you? And then I help them out. And then now I have this network of podcasters that are like, you know what you're doing. Talking about $1 million weekend. Someone was like, would you ever consult on this? And I just literally set up chrishutchins.com/podcast consulting, sent a link, and now I have a side hustle, which is podcast consulting for like reasonably expensive hourly rate.
How much you charge?
I charge $3,000 a month for 2 1-hour calls. So $1,500 an hour. But I was like, why not? And then I got 3 friends that knew everything about me to write quotes that were pretty good on there. So you can go check that out.
And then for everyone out there that's at the job or just getting started, like what would you recommend for them to be telling themselves?
I mean, be careful with employer permission here. I pre-approved doing a podcast. Sometimes some employers don't care, some do. I think we always think we're making this big leap, right? To do anything. We're like, oh, it's such a big, big ordeal. No, I'm going to launch 8 episodes. I'm not starting a career as a podcaster. I'm going to make 8 episodes, which is I'm recording on a microphone I bought for $100 in my basement. Like, this was not a huge financial endeavor. Easy. So I just tell people, you know, we were talking about crazy health stuff. It's like, you don't have to commit to a lifestyle. If you want to try being vegan, great. Try being vegan for 90 days. You don't have to like, I am a vegan. It's like, you could just try it out. So I think when people are in a job thinking, do I want to try this thing? Try it nights and weekends. You don't have to commit to it being your life. I don't know. I just feel like too many people think they have to quit their job to go do this thing when they could just figure something out maybe in a weekend. I don't know.
Dude, all the hacks go at 4% of you.
Yeah, let's see how high we can do this number.
That is a wrap. I hope you love the episode as much as we did making it for you. Make sure the 5% of you go check out Chris Hutchinson's podcast at All the Hacks. Also, make sure you check out my newsletter. Go to noahkagan.com and join the newsletter. We have exclusive emails each and every week. And grab the new book. And if you've already grabbed it, leave a review. And if you've already left a review, buy it for a friend. That is literally the greatest gift you can do in the planet for me, as well as for yourself and your friends. Next, text a friend you love them. Yo, dog, let's go record a podcast together. And before you go, slide in my DMs at Noah Kagan. I love hearing feedback from y'all. Finally, a couple shout-outs to the amazing team who make all this happen. Special thank you to Jason at podcasttech.com. He is my drinking tea buddy. Thank you to Jeremy, Cam, Tommy, Sylvie, Jay, Memo, and Diego from the Dork team for all the magic y'all do. Have a tremendous day. What's your favorite YouTube channel? Lately, I've been watching Outdoor Life Chef. It's this Asian dude up in Washington. He catches fish and cooks it.